Well, we hear this gospel every year, the story about Doubting Thomas, and that's his nickname. It comes down to us all these centuries later, and it's a pretty compelling story. I mean, to be able to touch somebody's wounds, their scars, and those are identifying things. Of course, Jesus holds in his hands, his feet, his side. If I were to identify my dad, he lost the tip of his pinky when he was a little kid. They had these washing machines, the gears were exposed, and so that was a pretty common thing. I would always, you see that, say, Dad, what happened? And other people, the same thing. So it's a very compelling story, and it's something that I wonder if Thomas could ever shake that nickname. I mean, all of his life, you're the one. Oh, yeah, you're the one that doubted. You're the one that didn't believe. I suppose he grew into it, he accepted it, and it helps to shore up our disbelief and our doubts and our fears. Sometimes these nicknames stick. I mean, it's part of our fallen nature to identify a person with their mistake or their sin or their scandal. If I say one name like Pete Rose, everybody will say, oh, I remember what that guy did. His birthday is next week. He turns 83. I don't suppose he'll ever outlive the fact that he was betting on games that he was managing. It's a lifetime ban, right? And we want to talk a little bit about mercy, God's mercy, which is perfect and healing, and it gives hope. It's the whole reason we can stand before him in all of our brokenness and have trust. And the shame begins to fall to the side, the guilt and the brokenness. Anyway, before we get into that, there are these bulletin bloopers, you know, that church bulletins of mistakes that people make. You should proofread. Spell check is never sufficient, but there are dozens of these. I just wrote down a few. The first, these are all meant to be tongue-in-cheek. The first says, don't let worry kill you off. Let the church help. So anyway, you can obviously catch the mistakes, right? The second, it says, please remember in your prayers the many who are sick of our parish. The many who are sick in our parish, right? I hope there aren't too many sick of the parish. The last one is my favorite. The low self-esteem support group meets this Thursday night, 7 p.m. Please use the back door. If you have low self-esteem, right, you're not going to come in the front door. And who has low self-worth, self-esteem? All of us. That's part of what original sin, it damaged us. Even the best of us, we wonder, does God really love me? Could he really forgive me? Is there a place for me in heaven? I mean, given my own shortcomings, my struggles, my fears, we're pretty insecure human beings. And at least in my experience with my life and being a spiritual director, a priest, a confessor, I'd say most of us worry about if we're lovable, if someone really loves us, if our life wasn't lived, if we'd never been born, would anybody even notice? That's the famous story of It's a Wonderful Life. No one would care if I wasn't here. And of course, then it's revealed what a difference one life can make, yours and mine. There are a lot of hurts in our world, and so God sent his son. And Thomas, his doubt is healed now. My Lord and my God, that you are real, and that your love is sufficient. Your grace is for me. It's a personal gift. You take away the sins of the world. I was sent by Bishop Lestecky years ago to go to a conference of post-abortion syndrome for men, which seems strange, but the one guy got up and gave this testimony and said when he was young, abortion was legal, so he got himself in a little bit of trouble, so he paid for it. And then later on, it happened again, and he paid for another one. And then he got married, and they had their first child. When the nurse handed him his baby, he knew that wasn't his first child. He knew there were two others. He said it took him years to find God's mercy, to heal that hurt that he didn't know, but now he did. And God alone can take away the sins of the world, the brokenness, the shame. We're living in a political season. You're going to hear that word abortion a lot. But we have to remember that there are people in our midst, our family and our friends, who have made that choice and now recognize the sadness of it. And they want God to forgive. And of course, he's willing and able. There's no sin that he can't heal, no brokenness that he can't reconcile. This week, because it's the octave of Easter, I've been eating a lot of chocolate and sitting in my pajamas watching a lot of TV, just letting myself go. But I've been watching this little PBS series about Sir Edmund Hillary, first guy to climb Mount Everest, about this time of the year, 1953, with a Sherpa named Nanjing. fantastic story, and I love climbing mountains. I was up to the top of Rib Mountain last Monday. Feel pretty good about that. And I walked. Anyway, the story about his life, which is a captivating one, he's from New Zealand, had a lot of experience climbing on glaciers, and so that gave him the skill set to handle the Himalayas. Anyway, what I didn't know, and there was even a premonition of it, but I didn't catch it. It was after he had become famous, and he and his wife, they were building schools for Sherpas in Nepal. And his wife and his youngest, they had three kids, were flying up to meet him, except that the plane went down and they were all killed. And then he went into a deep brokenness, a darkness. He's so angry and so hurt, he couldn't even acknowledge his other kids. Finally, by God's grace, he could forgive the Lord who permitted it. Sometimes we're angry and we're sad and we don't think that we could ever have that ever in the way that it once was. But God is going to help us if we let him. He's able to, well, so many hurts, so many things that people carry, much of it unknown to anyone but God. I think of all the things that people endure, whether it's a divorce in the family, some kind of a illness that's a terminal one, a car accident, suicide, all sorts of brokenness. Cardinal Dolan, who is in New York, he said that he went to the penitentiary one time to celebrate Mass. It was Lent time, and one of the inmates after communion stood up and sang, "Were you there when they crucified my Lord? Were you there when they laid him in the tomb?" And he said that it was so stirring. The man sang it with such sincerity, and a lot of the inmates were crying, nodding their heads. They had done some terrible things, and they learned to be sorry. And more than that, they had learned that God came for sinners to reconcile us, to give us hope, to show us that there's a way out. Like Thomas, we doubt, we fear, we wonder, are you able and willing? Could you help me, save me? And Jesus definitively from his cross says, "Father, forgive them. They know not what they do." It's Divine Mercy Sunday, and this afternoon we'll have a little program. You know that if you go to communion today in the state of grace, and you've been to confession any time in the last 6 weeks during Lent, there's a special grace, like a second baptism. And it's such a healing thing. I see it every year. Ever since Pope John Paul made it a universal feast, there's a lot of healing that's happening in our world. There's a lot of brokenness. But where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. I hope that you consider coming. There'll be a little talk by this Sister Therese. She's from the Missionaries of the Word. There'll be two of us here in confessions. They play the Chapel of Divine Mercy, which is sung. It's really beautiful. It's you see people that are moved, and there's a lot of hope that's restored. I hope that you consider coming. Mother Mary Catherine, when she was here, she told this story. I've told it at least once, maybe twice since then, but it's a year ago. So she used to work with the Missionaries of Charity and got to know Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And she got sick with asthma, had to come home. But anyway, she lives up in Door County now with a little order of sisters, and they do beach ministry, I think. Anyway, I'm kidding. But she was talking about one time Mother Teresa told a story about a little girl who was like 8 or 10 years old, and she and her dad were having a day out, a little picnic, and the girl was all dressed up to her best dress, all pressed and clean, and she looked like $1 million. And she and her dad having a little day, and the dad made some sandwiches, and they said their grace, and she's about to eat her sandwich, and he's like, whoa, what? Hey, that's a big sandwich. You should use two hands. She's like, Dad, I'm old enough. I know what I'm doing. She bites into that sandwich. It's really good. And down comes the ketchup and the mustard all down the front of her dress. She looks at her dad. I'm sorry, Dad. He kind of shrugs like he expected it, reaches over and gives her a big kiss right on the lips. And he's got to wipe the ketchup and the mustard off his face. And then she says, I love you, Dad. And Mother Teresa stopped and said to her sisters, that's how God loves me every day. I'm that little girl. I want to do big things and I fail. But he never fails me. He takes away my sadness and my shame. He loves me unconditionally. He shows that he is merciful. The sins that he forgives, are forgiven. Low self-worth, low self-esteem, those things, they come from sadness and shame. They come from guilt. We don't have to carry those, at least not alone. God sent his Son to carry them, to nail them to a cross, and to definitively forgive them. In Jesus we trust, and with his help, we make it real today.